No, it's for a break.
My clock's wrong.
Yeah. Guess we introduce everybody. Jim Couts on the board.
Patricia Meyer.
John Jay.
And it's Dan Whitey.
I'm Wendy Wallet, Park and Trails Planner.
David Steiger, Planning and Development Manager.
I'm Rocky Houston, Parks and Lands Manager.
Well, so then Don, Mr. Meeks.
Don Meeks, PAB Board Member.
And we have a guest, I guess. Mr. West, would you like to introduce yourself?
You bet. My name is Jim West. I'm a commercial realtor here in town, but I'm also on the Parks Foundation Board. And looking forward to coming to my second meeting here.
Great. Thank you.
Hello.
Perfect. Next thing up is approving the minutes of the last meeting. I have a motion to.
I make a motion to approve the meeting, the minutes of the last meeting as distributed.
Second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Close. His report. Oh, thank you.
Jim is on.
Foundation.
All right, manager's report. So for the record, Rocky Houston, Park and Lands Director. So we've had an eventful month since we last met. So the good news is that we had six openings when we last met in our park operations. We have filled or making offers for five of the six. So we have one. So in the next 2 weeks, within the next month, those people will come on board. They're staggered. For our union, we try to have people come on different dates. So there's a seniority based off of how they scored. So if an opportunity comes in the future, we don't have five people with the same seniority. So that's coming. We're looking at interviewing for that additional position. In our lands, we have a 9-month technician position open, and we're made an offer. And then we are reviewing applications or getting applications for one other position. It's another 9-month position. And they primarily for parks are the staff that go out and eradicate our noxious weeds throughout our properties. We didn't have a contract with the state at Battleground Lake and other places. So
did you have a contract?
Yeah, we are contracted to go out and do services for other. So we do for the city of Camas, we do some work for them, the state parks. And then we, Noxious Weed also does things for in the road right away for public works. So parks and public works are the two biggest entities that they on county property are used to eradicate noxious weed. So they do most of, not all, but a lot of our spraying herbicides and pesticides. So this weekend, we had some restroom damage up at Moulton Falls. So we've sort of removed that broken sink and some graffiti and things like that. We'll still have to make some repairs, but I believe we have that up and running, opened again. We are working on setting a date to kind of create a big meeting for trails at Blackmoose Lake to kind of get different user groups and issues out in the open and us to talk in regards to moving that forward. So we've not set a date yet, but that should be, we're hoping in May to have that meeting set.
Can someone from the board attend the meeting?
Yeah.
I'm a user.
As long as you don't tell us that one of our trail closures is impacting all of your loops that you do.
There's no loop now that trail closed. I messed up. I should have waited it after.
No. It's. I'm glad that you did because it got me out to a spot I hadn't been that on that spot there and identified that our trail standard is not where it is. And that trail was constructed incorrectly, which led to its
and it's a very it's the most popular trails that one
but long term we've got an idea that we're gonna try to get it repaired. We're gonna get it repaired as a temporary fix and make it smaller for water for the trail. And long term we're looking at rerouting the trail to get you a view of the waterfall and locate the trail in a better spot as well. So I think long term it's helped us create a better recreational experience in the future. We're in budget season, so we'll talk about that later, David, probably during the round table, kind of talk about sort of our process with our capital plan or sort of change requests, just sort of a high level review and the touchstones that we'll have with you all. It seems like we've done nothing but everything in the last month. We've got a bid packet coming in next week here soon for Moulton Bridge. So that would be the repair work that'll occur after July 4th. And this is starting. So after July 8th and be done in the fall, September, October-ish. So if you want to go out to Moulton Falls and experience that hike with the big cool bridge, you've got Memorial Day and 4th of July to take that in. So we're trying to get those two key holidays still have it open and then it'll be closed. Hopefully when the leaves change and you have that nice fall hike, we'll be open back up. Yeah, that's a leaf.
When the leaves change, you mean this fall sometime?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's probably a 2 month to 3 month repair project for the bridge.
It's a repair that we identified in 2017 have now finally got on our capital plan to make those repairs and extend its useful life significantly. The bridge is older than you think. It was built in the 60s.
Almost eligible for listing. So almost 75 years old. You do the math.
So that's a big project. We've had a couple public meetings, I think, since we were last here. I saw some of you at some of those. Lindy was upset because we only had like 35 or 40 people show up to one of them, you know, but which is still a great turnout from my perspective. And we got good feedback, and that was at the Hazeldale was the last one we had. We have a meeting tomorrow for the Harmony Sports Complex. We'll be in this room at 6 p.m. Hopefully you all got an email with a little notice on that. If you didn't, please let me know so we can make sure we've got the right email address as such. We have another public meeting coming up on 22nd. I'm close. That will be at Minnehaha Elementary School, and that's going to be over the 78th Street Heritage Farm riparian or wetland project. So we're not leading that project, but I'll be there. Lindy will be there. Nope, Lindy won't be there.
I'll be there.
David and I will be there to answer any questions that do come out. The one tomorrow, I'm the MC, so be prepared. Sunday.
Yes.
Wednesday. We won't even give you a seat because you won't be able to need it. But and that's reviewing the basically the 90% setup for it. There's some pretty cool renderings. Even if you don't attend, they'll be in our packet online. I'm showing what it'll look like when it's all done. So it's kind of if you're like me and looking at 2D stuff, it doesn't always make sense. But then if you see it all pertified, it's like, oh, that's going to look pretty good. So we had another meeting last month. What was it? Curtain Creek.
Yes.
And that was before or after our meeting? It was after this meeting.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And 80. Oversell it.
Yeah, no, that was a good meeting. I think that's good question and answers. We had a bunch of darn racquetball players there. I mean, no, yeah, we had a good engagement there, and so that was good. I got some great feedback, I think, for us as we move forward, and I think people were understanding of our phasing through our fiscal limitations. So still some questions, as there always is, in regards to the field and all building yet. Is it going to be playable for at least practice and sort of, but not really, just depending on what your definition of playable is for practice. We're working on some leases with some partners right now, so we're working on a scheduled meeting on site for BGSA to get a lease set up there. We're working with Prairie Fields, and so we went out and did a site inspection there. We're working on our lease expired, so we're trying to get all of our leases in the same sort of style and format where there's consistency to help us and our operations team as we're working through that. Prairie Fields, that's off 144th. It's off 503 and 144th. So it's out there. It's a softball field complex that was established back in the 60s. We acquired it in 2018, and had it leased to them the entire time. And then I believe we've got the Camp Hope and the Camp Curry leases are just about ready to go for signature and review as well. So we're getting a lot of that, those leases cleaned up. It's been working on that. Seems like we have another one of those things out there. David. We're also working on our agricultural leases because of RCO encumbrances on a lot of our properties. That activity requires us to get approval from them, so we're working on that. We're primarily focused on dry agricultural practices and limiting animal use of those fields for grazing. So it's mainly like hay. Once we get that, we have some parcels out there that we'll be putting an RFP out to have for primarily hay production or other dry crop production.
At least I'm aware of Anderson, but it's not a ball field lease.
Yeah, so Anderson Community Park was acquired in 2018 over off of 82nd and 88th, 182nd and 88th. You know where the Walgreens is on the corner of? It's kind of about a mile farther east there. We're on Mill Plain, where they've got that roundabout way out right before it turns into country. A half mile, and you'll get the. It's a future community park, and so we, the owner is still living on it, so we have a lease that will get signed in next week for about another year, and. In the process we'll be going through right now as it's scheduled for development in the next six to 10 years. And so we're going through structural assessments. There's a beautiful old barn out on it and a loaving barn. It's not for making bread. It's for cheese, right?
Cheese. So the cows can loaf them.
They keep telling me different stuff.
I don't know why it's called.
I'm not a dairy person.
I'm not a dairy farmer, so I don't know why it's called. Do you know? Does anybody know why it's called the loafing shed?
I thought it was loaves and cheese.
They hang out.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Loafing around.
Loafing. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Probably the shed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure.
That's what I thought. Loafing shed.
It doesn't look like something you'd loaf in. It looks, but anyways.
Depends on whether you're four-legged or two-legged. Requirements.
Touche. But and
okay, a loafing shed, sometimes referred to as a run-in shed, is a small three-sided shed built inside a paddock dressage training area. You're a horse person, you didn't know this. A loping shed enables horses to get out of the elements such as the hot sun or cold wind and rain and retreat to it, secure to a secure covered space.
This loping,
you're right.
It's a place shelter. This loping shed was used for feeding the cows because okay. It's got a bunch of troughs in it. Concrete troughs.
Was feeding barn, but I guess
goes around with a lovely mud all over that.
Not now, but probably then, yeah. When they were running cows out there, I'm sure it did. I'm sure it was a mess.
And we're working on hopefully finalizing our lease on the aquatic lands out at Vancouver Lake. So we've been working with DNR for a year or two. So that's just it's an old lease that we're just updating. And
are we involved in the, I saw in the paper that they have some plans for the algae. Algae blooms, or are you involved in the discussions, or there, that's separate?
So, good question, and I'll give you a complex answer. So, our job is the recreational side, so when the signs need to be placed, there's an outburst. We help install those signs, but Clean Water is the ones who are working on that. And I believe you're right. They have a plan to do some sort of treatment this year there. And I think there's a treatment at Lacamas. Yeah.
And then to re-engineer the channel.
Yeah.
And that's a recent addition to Clean Water's responsibilities.
Yes.
They were not up until maybe this year. It was not a county Clean Water project. It was a special district, or I can't remember what it was managed state. Previously.
I know there was a lot of studies and reports occurring over the last few years, and so now there's been a push to do something there. So that is a new.
I can't remember what, I think it's called a recharge channel or something, or refresh channel.
I know the words, now I can't remember. Yeah. We did nominate a staff person for a WRPA award, so we're hoping he wins. So fingers crossed. If not, at least let that person know that they did.
Somebody who is running for a board position as WRPA.
Even though there's a typo. You can check your email, April 19th is the day for finalization. No, WRPA sends them out. You're all members. Although I think we have to check with Janice and Paolo if they've got added to the list or not. But we have an annual membership, and so we put all of our staff and you on it every year when we get it. So make a note of that for Amy. If we can include you now, I think we could, versus waiting until next year, which gets you some emails. There's training opportunities and things that you can participate in, and awareness.
Discounting conference.
And we get a discount for you to sure. And
reference. So what would you
WRPA
Washington Recreation Parks Association.
WRPA is an association of parkies, park recreation providers around the state, and they're there to help support and provide an educational tool for the parkies. And so on the board, I'd be an at-large member assisting with that mission. And so assignments are always varied based off of whether you're working on a conference or other assignments there, but it's just a voluntary role to help support. I was on that in Oregon. I was the president of a section for outdoor recreation and county parks prior to moving up here.
There's a legislative component to WRPA.
They do advocate
bills, and they have an advocacy role.
It has influence to the legislators at decision making.
So there a lot of times they will set up those days where you go and meet, but a lot of times what it is that group helps direct what either legislation. So there's a lobbyist that they usually hire that does a lot of that work on behalf of the members. But it in Oregon, that's where we had a lobbyist, and we would basically as a board determine the things that we are for or against, or we're pushing to try to get something put out there. And so our lobbyists would help assist.
No, I think that's very good. I mean, anyone can be close to make decisions, the lobbyists.
And the intent is we're one of the largest communities in Washington, one of the fastest growing communities in Washington. And currently the president for this year is at a Longview, which is great. But then it just gives a Southwest Washington presence there. And they've got board members from Eastern Washington around the Puget Sound area. And so it's just a good way to continue to contribute to the care and feeding of the profession I'm in. So, and maybe I'll be unlucky or lucky enough to be selected. And if not, you know, we'll have been in the state a couple of years. So work on that stuff. And that's all I've got. I think that's good. But you know, before I let you go, let me turn it over to Lindy.
All right. So I'm here tonight to share with you our preferred concept for Minnehaha Neighborhood Park. And before I do that, I just want to give you a little background. We're all up to date on where we're at in the process. Last August, we had our first open house for the new park development, which was the park's located on Northeast 17th Avenue, just north of Minnehaha Street in the Northeast Hazeldale Neighborhood Association. It's a 5-acre undeveloped park property with lots of nice trees on it. So we met with the community in August, and we had of 2023, and we had an online survey that folks were able to provide feedback through the open house and also the survey. We took all of the information that we gleaned from that, and we developed three concepts that we presented to the community this past December. We didn't have an additional survey there, but we did ask for comments and feedback at the open house, and then also just through email or phone calls. And so we had about a month time period there where folks were able to provide comments. So, since then, we've been working through the process to look at those comments and finalize our preferred concept. I'm not going to share all three concepts with you tonight. I'm just going to show the preferred concept. But I can just kind of describe that the first concept was kind of, I want to say low development, but it's more typical to what we've been providing in our other parks, where there's usually just one circular path and maybe a small playground, not a lot beyond that. The second one activated the site a little bit more. It still had kind of a somewhat undeveloped feel to it, where we had a nice walking path that connected from one end to the next and improved neighborhood connectivity. And it had some adventure play nodes in it it had a larger traditional play area up towards the front of the park, and then adventure play nodes, which are more like nature play areas in the back end of the park, where it's a little bit more secluded and adventure-y rather than more developed and traditional, you would see at one of our parks or one of our neighborhood parks. And then the third concept had a lot more development. It had a much wider path through the park, and it had a lot more concrete that you would see, a little bit more development. A lot of people commented it had a more of a commercial or almost like an industrial park kind of feel to it, not industrial.
Urban.
People's comments, yeah, urban feel. And so we've taken all of the comments that we received from those and then narrowed it down to this preferred concept. So give me a second. Oops. Screen mode. So this looks a lot like concept number two. My It is. Oh, there it is. Oh, it's really slow. It's just really slow. I'll move fast. So the primary, the path that you see that waves through the site connects 17th Avenue to the neighborhoods on the west and the north side. That's more or less laid out as it was in the original concept. We have used this as kind of our base and then taken the things from concepts 1 and 3 that people really seem to prefer or have a lot of connection to. And so we've made some changes to that, taken a couple of things away and substituted them with what we heard that folks really enjoyed from those other two concepts. One of those is that in concept 1, we had a circulation or a concrete path that was circular that people could walk around. You can kind of see here that kind of olive shaped path around the lawn. That before wasn't connected as a circle, and it was a gravel path rather than, or soft surface gravel path rather than a concrete path. And so we formalized that with the concrete path. The adventure play nodes that you see here, I mentioned, you can see there's one, they're kind of brown here hidden in the trees. Those, there were 3 of those before, and we've left 2 of them and taken 1 out and replaced it with this group seating area right here, this circular area. So that'll have some seat walls that people can kind of gather together in a small group and enjoy their company with one another. That was something that was picked up, I believe, from concept number 3 that people really liked, so we moved that over. We had a lot of positive feedback about ornamental flowering trees that were in concept number 3, and those were shown on that concept as throughout the that path that runs east to west. They were, it's kind of more formalized path, and it they were along either side of that. And instead of stringing them throughout the park, we mostly focused on them around the entryways. So at each of the 3 entry points, the north, the west, and the east side, we'll have some ornamental flowering trees there. I'm not going to tell you what kind yet, because this is just a concept. And then we have them along the pathway as you connect from that primary entrance off of 7. So you can see those in the pink or red. We've also improved some connectivity from these corner spaces along 17th Avenue, the north and the south corner. This corner on the north or southeast side used to have a boardwalk located here, but we heard a lot from the community from their experience that this wasn't really a wet part of the site, though that's what the assumption has been from the engineer and the landscape architect working on the project, the landscape designer. Folks mostly noticed the wet part, the wettest part of the park is over here where you see the meadow, this large kind of lime green area. And so we've taken that boardwalk because we got a lot of great feedback from people that they like the boardwalk aspect. And we've moved that over into what we understand to be the more wet side of the park. And there's a little bit of a group seating area there that'll have some integral benches that are within the boardwalk. We also, in concept number 2, did not have a picnic shelter, but there were a lot of folks who liked that. That was in concept number 3. And we typically have not had picnic shelters in our neighborhood parks. Cozy Camp, there's a potential for one to be added. I think it's on their master plan, but it wasn't included in the actual construction of the park. But we opted to bring that in here because I think we all agree that we need some places of respite from sun and rain. A lot of people are using the park in the rain, and even small groups of children who are, you know, schooled in local in-home preschools and things, they come and visit these parks, and it's nice for them to have it and everybody else to have a place to get out of the rain and to
receive. So will that picnic pavilion be part of the they
would
rent it, they could rent it
in summer? No, this would not be reservable.
First come.
Okay. And it'll be a fairly small shelter. It's not going to be anything that you would see in a community park.
Yeah, we try not to create a destination for the parks, and if we had it reservable.
Okay, no purpose.
Most folks were really supportive of all of the habitat planning areas that we have and less of the formalized landscape areas that you might see at a lot of our parks today. And so all of the dark green areas, not the lawn, but the dark green areas on the edges of the perimeter of the park, those are habitat planting areas. So they'll be planted with small plants, more like a restoration project rather than like a formal landscaping project that you might anticipate in a park like this. But try to listen to people. They really wanted us to not come in and cut down the trees, not come in and like completely change the feel of being here. And so we really feel that this concept does that for them. It looks like there's a lot going on here, but a lot of that are trails and things that help people access those areas and not get muddy, you know, wet feet and be able to enjoy the park throughout the year. So
how many acres is this?
It's just under 5 acres. And then we did bring in, this is accessible parking here. So we're not trying to create parking for the neighborhood in front of our park, but we would have one or two accessible parking spaces here. It's something that is an initiative that David and I have really been supportive of since we started, because the concept has been that we just don't have parking at our neighborhood parks. That's not necessarily fair to those who need to travel to the park, but they can't walk there. So we would recognize that.
A few accessible parking.
This neighborhood is also not very well served by sidewalks, and so there are people that may live within a half mile of this park and still choose to drive. There will be a parking aisle almost certainly on the frontage improvements on the east side, because that's the road standard that we'll be developing the road to. So right now there's just dirt parking because our fence is set back far enough, but we'll end up paving probably an additional 8 feet. And so there'll be parallel parking in the street. Not unlike Cozy Camp, if you've seen our Serenius Park.
We've also included a piece of entry artwork right up here. That was in concept number one, and we had a lot of positive feedback from that. So we included it. We would like to see art in public spaces. So we've included that. So right now we're working through looking at estimates and what this park is going to cost us when it's developed, making sure that we have that in our budget for future development, and then also working on the actual master plan document. We are taking the lead on writing our documents rather than relying solely on consultants to write documents for us. So we've started that process, and we hope to have a good draft of the plan to bring to you with our preferred concept and our estimate in the next 2 months. We'll come back to the meeting, and at that time, most likely, we'll be asking for action to recommend that we move forward to the council.
Yeah. You still have access to the north and the northwest corner there?
Yeah, so there's access.
Where the little pinks are, there's okay. A trail.
Right here.
Oh, okay, so you got, that's what you got.
Yeah, right here.
You got yourself. Well, very typical for us to either have pedestrian easements in subdivisions or road ends. Mm-hmm. In this case, both of these are right-of-ways that end at the park, and we use those as our walk-in entrances for those neighborhoods.
And we've shown a connection to the Ridge condominium apartment complex here on the south end, mm-hmm. And that's something that we'd have to work through, but it's something that we'd like to see, that that's part of the partnership or agreement.
Good comment.
There, go.
If I can make a comment that I appreciate what the county is doing, because I go to these events, which you do such a good job of being a mentor. And what I'm trying to say is what we discussed, I think, in one of the meetings, we're looking forward. You know, and in each one of your renderings, you are recognizing the changing demographics of our county. We have more families coming from other places and younger families. And when I see that small, I don't know if you call it a shed.
Shelter?
Yeah, that shelter. That's a recognition. We are having to move families homeschooling this county. Not because people are opposed to public school, it's just family decision. And I'm looking to say, I wish my kids would have had this when my kids because we homeschooled our kids, and we wanted to go to parks, but the question is, it's raining, where do we go? That's the future of that. When I look at the entrance over there, we are talking about all the artifacts. You know, but what we are saying to people is, a park is not a place where you go just in the summer, but the destination. We want to provide experience. So the park speaks for itself without us ever saying anything about it. I think that's a future. That's a recognition of the change in human rights. So thank you. I travel a lot in the country and I see things. And when I was in Arizona recently, and I was in Alabama, and what I see is they're still looking at the past.
I also want to comment, I think I've said this at a past meeting, but in our throughout our park development process and our two open houses, we had a process to get name suggestions for renaming this park. Right now, it's just referred to as the Minnehaha Neighborhood Park property. It was never formally named, though, so that was kind of a placeholder name, and it doesn't necessarily make sense with the geographic location, with the Minnehaha neighborhood and being in Northeast Hazeldale. And so in our first open house in August last year, we asked for name suggestions, and we put those through our process for what matches our policy on park naming. And then we also made some suggestions internally, and we provided three names at the December open house. One of them was Trillium Neighborhood Park, one was Wildwood Neighborhood Park, and the last was Mariposa Neighborhood Park, which is Spanish for butterfly. We had a vote that we allowed during that feedback process, and folks selected Trillium Neighborhood Park. Folks selected Trillium Neighborhood Park, and so that would have to be adopted by council, and that's part of what we'll do as we seek approval or adoption of our master plan. We did find Trillium in our initial visit.
There should be a movement now.
So, don't transplant them, you'll kill them.
So, we don't have a formal policy for asking the public for their feedback on naming a park. We have a park naming policy. The council, as Lindy mentioned, they decide what a park is named, but our preference is to not name a park after anyone. It's to name it after geographically or botanically or the flora or fauna significance in the area or on the property. But the voting gives the public the opportunity to provide us with feedback. It engages them in a different way than we normally would, and helps build that sense of ownership for the folks who participate in the public process. And so that's primarily the reason that we do it. But at the end of the day, a council decides. And we have, Lenny mentioned that placeholder name is Minnehaha Neighborhood Park. We have 17 undeveloped properties and they all have a name already. And it's hard to walk back from that. And so we do it early in the master planning process. And we're working with GIS to rename those properties so it says, instead of Minnehaha Neighborhood Park, it says Minnehaha Neighborhood Park property. So it's a piece of property that we own. It's a nuance, but it's something that Rocky and I really feel helps tee up the conversation later.
We have about the parks and we have properties that are in development. And that distinction means a lot from an operational perspective. And when people say, hey, I'm at this park, there's a different vision in your head versus a parcel that we just got out there. And so we're trying to tease that into this as we're talking about properties or parks. There's hopefully making that distinction easier.
So if I can just add a couple of things. This is a master plan. This represents a vision for the property. It's not the way it will be exactly configured when we get down to developing it. We will learn things during design development that may make us put us in a position where we need to shift something here or there, but it helps us express that vision graphically, develop a cost estimate, and then when we get into design development, the exact location of the shelter or the trails, you know, may tweak a little bit because of grading, because of soil type, those sorts of things. So I always want to sort of qualify what a master plan is and what a master plan isn't, so we don't find ourselves with people saying, but you didn't build that exactly. You didn't build that exactly where you said you were going to build it in the master plan.
But 10 years from now, when somebody wants us to come in and put a basketball court or something like that, we have a document to go back to.
We have to go through a master plan modification or amendment process, or a new master plan is so significant to change, or we say we can't because the master plan limits all these things. I think the other thing that we'll be communicating is that when we go to construction, we may not build everything there. It may be phasing, and so that's another. And I think at Curtain Creek, we learned there it was communicated that this is what it is, and we're going to build it. You know, it's like building a street. It's like point A, point B. And so we're dependent upon our budgets and funding. So we'll be managing the development to a budget, and if things keep climbing, there'll be less and less that that gets developed, unfortunately. We always have to balance is, do we put all of our money in this one property and getting exactly right and not have another property be developed? Or do we have two properties developed that are 50 or 75% developed and now we're getting a higher level recreational demand? And that's a tough spot we get put into and you guys get put into as we kind of move forward with these things.
This property is in the capital plan for development in 26, and we have $2.5 million budgeted to develop this property. We'll finish the master plan and start doing final design and permitting next year. So that's the plan.
What is the probability that a councilman go against the name that the citizens are suggesting?
It's a low probability.
It's very low, yeah.
I think
they approved the capital plan.
They'll respect the process that we've gone through for the naming. Mm-hmm. And unless there's some big out there that we're not aware of that, triumphs the name of something bad that's happened locally, I think it
was. As I recall, we had a couple of council members that were.
Yep. Yes. We've actually had really great participation from the Parks Advisory Board and from the County Council, which has been really great to see. So I believe we had two councilors at the first meeting, Councilor Belcott and Glenn, Councilor Young there. Okay. So
I think they were both at both.
Yeah.
The only times I've ever in my career really seen where there's a naming issue is where we're naming it after somebody. For some reason, and that's the only time I've really ever saw our elected officials sort of engaging in that naming process.
We follow the policies, so we're naming it after flora and fauna, not a person. So.
Makes it easier. Yeah. Everybody can get behind Trillium, for instance.
Let's make one other. So on Curtain Creek Community Park, we have an RFP that's going out for an artist to help us design and create the sculpture or some artwork that will be in the children's play area. If you attended the open house, we kind of describe what this is. And right now we're putting together a landholders list for artists that might want to apply for that. And so if anybody is familiar with public artists in the community, if you could share that with me.
This is for the sculpture.
It's a sculpture.
Not the cat, large great blue heron, but
because it kind of distract you.
It has kind of a bird beat nature.
We may have a kitty cat out there. That's bird related.
Yeah.
The playground is bird themed. And so the idea is that it would sort of anchor the playground. I started this all by calling in my concept, in one of my concept markups, tall thing. I had a label that said tall thing, and everybody's like, well, what do you mean? And I'm like, I don't know, something tall. We have designers that, you know, that are working on that. And we want to provide them with feedback, but we don't want to tell them exactly what to do because they want to exercise their, you know, their creative side of their brain. So I just envisioned it being something that is sort of a landmark when you're in the parking lot and you're getting out, your kids can see that where the playground is because there's this playful piece of sculpture that you can see from the park. And then when you get to it, we were talking about this today, it can't be so tall and so specifically every detail's at the top that when you're there isn't any value at the base because kids are this tall. There needs to be something that's sort of foreground and territorial about it. So it's an interesting challenge.
What you're talking about is Walt Disney. When Walt Disney developed the Disney that we know, it was as it did. They don't want to create an experience where when people can get to my property, they remember to come back even before getting here.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about.
And that's the whole concept behind the playground is there's all sorts of details in the Curtin Creek playground. Thanks, that you go there and you want to return but you didn't see everything, right? It's like a layers of an onion, not maybe the best analogy because onions are sort of unpleasant. But you want to go back, right? Because you didn't see everything and you didn't get to experience everything. And so that's the idea, especially with our community park playgrounds. We want them to be places where people want to return. We don't have the luxury with our, all of our playgrounds to have this big, you know, diverse playground area, but throwing the ball against
the new kids.
Stop recreating in the recreation area.
We're your other side of the loss. I got a finger and I can shake you.
And they saw you?
No, they didn't. The mom got involved in that.
Yeah.
Open the window.
Hey! Trying to have a meeting. Well, we're still on the manager's update.
No, yeah, you're right. And Lindy, when would we expect to see a similar presentation for Hazel Dell's update?
I think I plan for next month to come and present the next month for the preferred concept, but then again it won't be asking for action at that point. We'll have to write the master plan.
More of an update like we've done today.
Perfect.
I just didn't want to surprise you at the end, but here's the master plan.
And then later this fall, Mount Vista will probably be the first kickoff meeting.
So June 20th is the open house.
Okay, June 20th. That's later this fall. Yeah, June 20th.
All right. So in June, that's Mount Vista. Is another neighborhood park
property.
Mount Vista neighborhood park property.
Mount Vista property.
I suspect that we'll have a very similar design theme there in regards to trying to keep that natural. It's got a nice little oak stand there.
Big leaf maple.
I'm going to call them oak still. But it has a nice deciduous experience. And so
we got our arborist report on that property just recently. So we're getting,
I'm going to
do our due diligence. So,
but no, that one's, I think the next new planning effort we've got underway.
Yeah, next neighborhood park, yeah. And we'll talk a little bit about budget at the round table. So get a sense for how much we actually have going on.
And then my last comment is we're getting real close. I think we're trying to get a date set in May to go to a work session with the council to talk about our finances. And so we will be prepared to talk to you guys before we go. So we'll be coordinating that to occur after this meeting so you guys will get that preview presentation. We'll be our guinea pigs, maybe make sure we got our points correct. Right now it's about 32 slides. not enough pictures.
Cindy, did you see Dan's note there? Did you see Dan's note?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got it.
Okay, yeah. Thanks again, Don. Moves us to unfinished business. Jim?
Yes.
We have some unfinished business, but nothing that we can talk about today. Okay. Memorial tribute policy still out there, sort of on hold.
Okay.
So nothing really formal to talk about.
We're just trying to take care of the backlog, and then we'll figure out whether to do.
What do we have to get through them? We have pre-engaged four of the 12 people. We're going to just sort of knock them down as we can get a staff person assigned to it.
As they engage with us.
Yeah. And any new ones that are coming in, we're just going to tell them that we're working on the ones we have and working on our policy.
New business.
All right, so I've got an action item here. I'm asking for a subcommittee to be formed. I would like two people, and not seven, to develop a cost recovery policy. So background is the county has a program, a code that talks about fee, and in that it alludes to cost recovery needs for us in council setting fees. And when we met and in the last year and a half, and we're talking about our parks fee program, we identified that we needed to have a policy that sort of set the framework for cost recovery, which then would allow us to determine our methodology for setting our fee rates for renting fields like we're here, renting this room, shelter, etc. And so this subcommittee would meet a couple times to review, to develop concepts, review kind of the cost recovery triangle that I'm sure you guys have seen out there in other jurisdictions. And there's an organization that kind of has that model where essentially the broader the asset is for public benefit, the lower cost recovery is to zero. So like behind us is a neighborhood park. The neighborhood park's name is Padden Neighborhood Park. There's no fee to use Padden Neighborhood Park. We have a playground right down here. That's a community asset. It's open to benefits everyone, and so there's no fee for that. However, if we offered singing lessons for Rocky, that only benefits me, and therefore our cost recovery would be much higher to maybe even exceed what it actually costs to help benefit those community assets. And there's a rise based off of the more individual benefit versus community benefit is sort of the framework that is established. Now, getting to that, those perfect numbers is always the sweet science, and they're never perfect, but it's a framework to help us do that. And then if this was formed and we developed a draft policy, we would then I would assume have to get adopted by council, and then because then that would be setting our framework. And with Cardiograph, which is our task management software, and our other accounting software, allows us to start making sure we're coding things correctly, et cetera, to help make that cost recovery analysis better and easier as we move forward. So when we review our fee programs in the future, we'd have methodology to then work on. It means it's less pressure on you guys in regards to, I think we should charge $5 versus $4. But still, it's tough. Any fee change is difficult.
This is different from the exercise we recently went through.
Yeah, this would be sort of the next iteration of that.
Gotcha. Okay.
So before we set some fees and we identified that we didn't have a policy that would help guide us in the future. So what is our cost recovery for adult sports fields versus youth sports fields? Should there be a different cost recovery? We've set something like that here at Lou Jensen. There is a difference in that, but we don't have a policy to kind of help create that.
That's part of the feedback that the county council gave you when you guys presented the fees. Right? Not necessarily specifically this, but they come back with other ideas about it.
Yeah, they told us to come back and identify the other funding options we had. And this would be more, this creation was came out of our original, our subcommittee before, where we didn't have a policy for cost recovery. And typically cost recovery policies are a lot of times in urban parks or city parks where they have a much more robust recreational program. So there's a lot of other programming out there that this would be applicable to us. We have a simplified programs in regards to, we primarily rent spaces where people do stuff versus actually having the classes and swim lessons and those sort of things. So it's less important than if we have that portfolio of recreation, but it's still important for us to consider offsetting, making that decision here, like at Luke Jensen is, it is an MPD or General Greater Clark Park District funded, so there is a levy that subsidizes this, and should it be 100% subsidized, and there's no fee for users, or is it 50%, is it 75%, is it 30% subsidized? And so that's where this policy would help us in regards to determining how we come up with the rate. And rates are always going to be dependent upon market analysis, what are others charging, and our actual costs associated with that cost recovery. Because it may cost us $1,000 an hour to operate a field, being very facetious. But
$1,000 an hour.
Right. And so now we have to think, well, how do we get that price lower? What are we doing wrong? Or that's just the way it is, and we're going to subsidize that and only charge $35 or $75 an hour.
I assume, with the way it works, that Jim would be the one who wants.
So I think in the past, what we did is you guys just raised your hand and said, yeah, I'd like to be a part of it. And then we would take that and invite those who are interested to a meeting. And right now I'm looking at this probably being no more than three meetings. We're usually during the day because that's when I work. But we can coordinate that if we need to do them in the evenings. And there, we try to keep those sessions to 90 minutes so that we're being respectful of your time and we're bringing forward. I think of it kind of like the master planning things. Is the first one's sort of going to be a kickoff. We're going to have some data and we're going to get some information back from the subcommittee. The second meeting we have is going to be sort of a draft policy that's just dealing off that data we talked about and information we had. And then if we have a third one, if we still need, we tweak it again and come back and update our status to you guys as after those meetings and eventually come back here for a recommendation for the full Parks Advisory Board.
Sounds to me that I would move forward with approving this. I think, I think three people would be fair.
And volunteers? Larry Kirkland is an artist.
Oh, okay.
That's just
scoping out.
Okay, that's
my name.
All right, I got
John.
All I need is two people minimum. It's not just me. Don, you want to do some policy work?
Yeah, of course. You know, I'm always up for, you know, I'm glutton for punishment is what they say. Unlike the last committee that Jim and I did together, some of the times weren't good times to meet. So if you only need two people, I would ask if I committed, would you be open to being more flexible with the meeting times so that I can do it in person?
Yeah, we can definitely do that. And flexibility, is that 8 o'clock at night or 6 in the morning, or is it during 7 to 6?
Again,
I'll ask for a friend.
Yeah, mo flexible is what I'm saying. Amy did a good job with her little surveys and such. It was just we wanted to knock it out. So it was, we wanted to pick some dates. And so I would ask if I committed this time, and I'm asking for myself, not for a friend. If I committed this time, it'd just be a little bit more flexible with the time. No, so I can attend in person.
And I think you're right, is that we don't have the same time crunch or commitment here to do the policy. Take however long it takes. And if that means it takes us longer to coordinate those dates, I'm fine with that.
Okay. Yeah, then sign me up.
I think that also worth noting is we have a policy specialist or person that will be doing the drafting of the policy. It won't be
on our shoulders.
Yeah. So there'll be some support.
Yeah, I would just, you know, I'm new here, so like, for a long time. Something that I talked to Rocky about extensively. So I can jump in as an
alternate. Okay, was it good? Well, we'll work and coordinate something in the next quarter. And last time, if I remember right, we set the committee, and it took us about 6 months or longer before we set our first meeting because things happen. But we'll set a date, and then once we set that date and we're together, we'll try to coordinate the next date. But we have some work to do to get it set up and look at what others' policies are. That's part of our process, is to look at some examples because I'm smart, not lazy, you know, and I want to glean from others what they've done to help us.
Fee categories do you currently charge?
Good question. So we have sports fields, we have shelters, we have a room like this. Then we also have park permits or special permits, we usually call them, where someone wants exclusive use of a portion of the park. A lot of that
for a wedding or something?
Yeah, like a wedding or a baptism. And with that, there's a lot of different fees associated with that. So maybe you want to have alcohol. You know this, but we don't allow alcohol. Yeah. And so right now it's a $25 fee to have alcohol, even though it's not allowed. We recommended a $250 fee because that's
and parking.
Yeah, there's a parking system.
I know you're talking about charging parking for certain.
Yeah, currently we charge parking at four parks, and it's a anywhere from $2 to $6 or $8 based off of what kind of vehicle you have for a daily parking rate, or it's $30 a year. And we looked at trying to set that up to be a $5 fee, no matter what kind of vehicle you are. Because 97% of our parking, they use parking fees for vehicles, cars. So again, simplify it for our seasonal staff that are working with the public. And then we were looking at having a $40 annual rate. We also looked at a sticker versus a hang tag. Other communities have it where they have a cheaper sticker. It only goes on your one car, whereas the hang tag, you can actually move to different vehicles.
Cars for the state.
Yeah. And then we were looking at 13 additional parks. And so we had sort of a sports destination park and a natural resource destination park, so where we're getting a lot of use, but this would help us offset some of that. And like here at Luke Jensen was one of the sites we considered having a parking fee. And if you look out there tonight, if every one of those people had an annual parking pass, which gives it to where it's only 9 cents a day, they use it every day, or maybe that for them it's 35 cents a day versus $5 a day. Generate so revenue.
This policy group would deal with.
So we would be setting up a formulation as how would
policy about it.
Yeah, in regards to what is that cost recovery for a sports field versus a shelter versus adult versus youth, all that sort of nuance, and set up a framework if we had a different category of thing that we did charge a fee for. What is that methodology for it? So it's the simplest and hardest thing to do.
Would you discuss a levy lift in this? Would you discuss a levy lift?
This wouldn't be part of a levy lid lift. That'll be a separate conversation, which we will come back and talk about that as one of those options associated with our
fee options. And the pitch there, of course, is we've never had a levy limit since 2005.
Yeah.
The Department of Revenue recommends every 6 years a park district going through a review for a levy lid lift, because the state only allows a 1% inflation per year, and the average inflation is more like 3%. And so every year we're already falling back by 2%. You factor that over several years. And in Washington, the levy is based off of a starting budget. There's a rate associated with it, but it's a starting budget. And so if we double the number of houses and we double the number of prices of those houses, we don't get double the money. The tax rate actually goes down because that money need is stagnant or goes up
by dollars.
Yeah, it's dollar driven. And so other places, it's, you get a levy of 12%, whatever that value is of the houses. Is you get that 12 cents on the thousand, but set up a little different here, which is good and fair, but at the same time creates some problems sometimes for a land manager to continue to beat our things.
This is, I'm very excited actually. You remember when we had that meeting, there was one thing that I brought up for Rob, is that we need to have some kind of methodology or process, whatever, because we live in an ownership society in general. We all like to own something, and we own it, we take pride on it. And if you're changing demographics, I mean, we have more younger families here, many of them are professionals. I mean, I see it in better world in other places. I don't think it would be a problem. I think it's going to be well received, because a lot of places where these people are coming from, that already exists. So it's going to be an easy sell, but we need to process.
The other thing is, you guys know, we really have two park systems. We have our general fund regional parks and our Greater Clark Park District, and they have different funding, different standards, and there isn't parity in regards to what we can do in either of those type of systems. And so, but when you think about our park system, you think about a county park system, and that's something that I'd like to get fixed as well. So financially, there's equity and parity.
Yeah. All those hinterland parks are sort of
that we all use.
Ignored.
Yeah.
And funding wise, anyway.
They're available forever, and they're not designed. They're designed for regional use versus just my little neighborhood.
We need a second one. Yes.
Will be on this too.
No, I mean, I need a second.
He's saying there's a motion.
You don't need a motion.
Oh, does he have a motion? Oh, there's an action agenda.
It is an action item because I need a form of subcommittee.
Yeah, I know. Just making sure we're.
And we are in Robert's Rules book, so I could turn to page. And I was so excited because I found this, like, what I thought was Robert's Rules with, like, thumb tabs. I was like, oh, this is easy. Just turn, and now that was just the tabs for that we couldn't find existed.
So, did you ever sit and read those?
I have read Robert's Rules a long time ago. Not saying that I read all of them, but
find a parliamentarian after all.
The book I had, the print was so small.
We don't have a parliamentarian. Somebody who makes sure we're following.
That was on those
forums.
So now we're round table.
Last year I was out at Vancouver Lake, and we've been on the main bathrooms. They have this pool. It was three square, I guess this would be benches. Mm-hmm. And I reported that they were full of bees. So I don't walk it that often. So I was just out there last week. It was really sunny, and it's full, and it's not bees, it's wasps. I mean, they're buzzing everywhere. So are we liable if someone sits on that bench and gets some, should they be, they're probably all rotten. I'm sure the whole bottom of those benches is one big wasp nest.
So
FYI,
we will put in a request to retreat that area. From a liability perspective, I would say that's a natural,
right.
expectation.
It's somebody being a part of that.
It's a recreational community.
Okay, that's all I have.
But no, that's good, and I will.
They're probably all rotten anyway. I mean, I don't know.
It might need to be replaced with something a little bit more durable.
I hate to spray bees. I mean, I don't want to kill bees. I'm a bee friendly person.
These well, they're not bees.
They're not wasps.
Yeah.
It's a difference. Yeah. They're wasps.
They pollinate up for them.
I think those are murder hornets.
There's a lot of them there.
It's a wasp. Right now.
It's the weather. It's changing. It's the eclipse fall.
That's it.
I saw it yesterday. I was taking a hike out at Sandy Delta Park, and we had our couple of sour glasses. We're hiking, and so we had our timer set. So we started looking, couldn't see, it was really hazy. And it was really cloudy. And then at about 11:15, almost at the big peak, we saw it. We saw the thing, and the thing quite out of it. And then we saw it a couple more times during this peak time. But it was very cloudy, and I did get to see it.
David, your turn, I guess.
So you're all familiar, three of you are familiar with the Park Capital Improvement Plan. You may be familiar with it sort of indirectly. We have
superficially.
We have a Park Capital Plan. It's a 6-year plan. It's based on our 20-year capital facilities plan. We update the capital plan every year.
It's a 6-year rolling thing.
Basically, we add detail to the coming year, and we speculate at the 6th year. So if you really sort of dug into the annual projects, the specificity gets less as you get sort of out. And it changes. So we're working with our finance folks to develop our sort of first budget, which is different than the capital plan. So we have a budget that's approved annually, and then we have the capital plan that informs the budget. So we use the 25 project list from the 24 to 29 capital plan to make sort of the first budget request. And we're working on that now, and we have a deadline to sort of make our first submission to the finance folks, I believe April 19th, and the budget sort of gets formalized or starts to get formalized in May, June. So we're using 90% of the 25 project list in the current 24 to 29 capital plan. I would have something to show some moving targets right now, things that we need to add money for some projects that are unexpected. Some examples would be replacing the footings at or repairing the footings at Klein Line. We didn't have money in the budget to do that work. We had money to evaluate the bridge at Klein Line Pond. And so we're just making some modifications. The 2025 capital plan budget or project list was about $21 million, and it's right now hovering around $23 million because of those adds. That's a really big number. But it's primarily because $10 million of the 2025 budget is going to go to construct two things. Curtin Creek at about $7.4 or $7.6 million, and then Harmony Sports Complex at $3 million and change. So after that, we get past this sort of bubble, this little capital bubble, and we sort of settle into something a little bit more reasonable from a capital project team perspective. And so just wanted to bring that to your attention. We'll be coming back next month with some more specifics on that. And we're just, like I said, we're working on adding those
unknowns that have sort of come to light in our first few months of due diligence on new projects, and then some things at Camp Bonneville, because it's under a different fund. And so we're going to start adding the Camp Bonneville capital projects into this capital plan, because they need to be someplace. And so, but they come from a different bucket of money. So right now we have 1032, which is the Metropolitan Park District maintenance money. So that's the fund number 1032, and 3055, which is the fund number for sort of new capital projects. So we have two capital categories: stewardship capital, which is new park additions in existing parks. So a good example of that is Pacific Park. We're going to be building the other ball field at Pacific Park and putting four pickleball courts in at Pacific Park. And those are new items at the park, so those would be considered capital elements. So those are stewardship capital projects, taking care of the parks that we have. And then new capital is Curtain Creek, which is a brand new park, or Minnehaha. You saw the great drawing of Minnehaha. So that's new capital expenditures. We also have an equipment fund that's been in our capital plan, and we're going to be making some specific equipment requests for some to replace some vehicles, which is normally the vehicles would be replaced through the
ER&R,
which, so we effectively lease the vehicles from fleet, and it's the equipment replacement fund. So we pay into this fund, so when our vehicles need to be replaced, there's money in place. And so we're going to be requesting to purchase some new vehicles in addition to the vehicles that we currently have in circulation. So those will be in the capital plan. So we're working on constantly tweaking the way we do the budget and capital plan. So, and we'll be bringing the capital improvement plan to you hopefully earlier than we did last year, which was earlier than we did the year before. And there's a public process associated with that. And so, but as we're developing this budget for 25, we're working on the 25 to 30
cap. So. And then, we'll use a Parks Advisory Board meeting in, I'm going to say July-ish, maybe August, but July or August. That would be an open house public meeting hearing, almost like a hearing where we'll have the ability for the public to come and comment about our draft capital plan, as well as there'll be an online 30-day comment period. And that meeting would sit about in the middle of that comment period. Then once we take that, we will bring the plan back to you that a month later-ish. And that's where maybe it's 2 months technically to make sure that we've got any all that information gathered accurately and for I'll call it adoption, for your recommendation to bring it to council. And then we'll bring it to council in October-ish, September, October-ish.
Which usually means November. At least usually we can get on their calendar.
But we're going to get on earlier this year than we did last. Put in a request earlier to get on that schedule. And then they adopt it. And then there's the budgeting approval in November and December.
How does the public get notified there's going to be their opportunity for comment?
So we put it on the website.
I'm going to pick it up as well.
So usually we can't require them, but yeah, we'll put out a press release. Mm-hmm. We'll put it on the social media. We'll get it out. It's never as broad as we want, but it'll be fairly broad. Every 6 years, as part of the PROS plan, we have a heck of a lot more engagement. And instead of only looking at this once every 6 years and then just kind of take care of it in the intermediate years, what we're trying to do is have this engagement every year. Yeah. And because resources change, needs change, and
how can you predict 6 years out anymore?
Right. And so it's a good way to be more transparent, more engaged in regards and reactionary to things that are occurring. And it makes want to hopefully say it makes our 6-year review through the PROS plan process a little easier as well, because it's not a huge lift every 6 years. It's now the other change that we have to do this year is my philosophy is that we talk about our preventive maintenance work to extend the useful life of our assets before we start talking about major maintenance, replacing those assets. And bills come out of two different types of budgets, and it's sort of confusing. So we're going to have that as an appendix. We're still going to do the work, but it's going to be an appendix that's separate from the capital budget, so that everything that's in the capital budget they're approving or the CIP, the numbers are referenced what would be in 3055 or 1032 capital. And the other stuff is more operational dollars. So it's a little nuanced, but it was creating an in-house accounting glitch that we're trying to simplify for all of our.
It's complicated because of the definition of capital, the legal definition of capital. We do use 1032 funds occasionally for something that is considered capital or is assetized. So there's like a dollar threshold, and then is it new or is it a replacement? Does it extend the useful life of an existing asset? There's all sorts of if questions, if this, then that. And so our current practice, as Rocky mentioned, is to put the preventative maintenance and the major maintenance in the capital plan, but almost none of our preventative maintenance is capital, but about half of our major maintenance is and half of it isn't. And so how do we, you know, we use this as a managing tool, and finance uses it as a financial tool. And so we're constantly having a conversation with them to say how can this work better for you, but still work for us? Yeah. So I print out the 24 schedule real big, hang it on my wall, and I start January 1, start working on it. And I want all of it on the spreadsheet, because I want to know which parks we're doing hazard tree work in. You know? Because we do lots and lots and lots of things every year. So.
And then I have a date that I don't think I talked about earlier today. There's no further questions on kind of budgeting. So we'll bring our bigger budget to you guys. It's sort of autopilot and a lot of that stuff. There's not things besides change requests that we do. So I believe the, I'm going to get the terms right, wrong, but the Horse Council of Clark County?
Clark County Executive Horse Council.
I had executive in my head, but I couldn't get it to ring. Is having a tour or some sort of event on April 27th, is a Saturday. I believe we forwarded that email out to you guys like back in January. I don't know what Tyler and his team are planning to present, but I encourage a couple of us to attend. It sounds like he's trying to get a lot of policymakers and other people there to promote. And
we don't have a role in that. Planning and development, operations.
I think Matt's planning on going out and being there on that day as well, but. It'll be at Whipple Creek. Oh, I'm sorry, I thought everyone knew. Tyler Castle is sort of the lead for doing adopting the park at Whipple Creek. So Whipple Creek is off of 10th, 11th. I always get those two streets messed up, but it's the access is a couple of blocks out there. 179th and 13th.
It's off of 179th up 21st Avenue.
21st, there it is, yeah. 21st. Because I know north the 21st. East boundary is 11th. And then the entrance is at 21st. It's just a little country road. Dead ends into our small parking lot there. So.
Which you have maintained well, despite the kids that go and go zoom, zoom, zoom in the middle of it.
It's hard.
It's gravel. Yeah, you.
I believe his, well, recent it out, but I think it was 10 a.m. Does that sound right?
Yes, sounds right. 10 to noon, I think.
Yeah.
Well, that's on the 27th.
Yeah.
Is this in an old email? I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure I didn't send it. So
I know we talked about it, and I thought we sent out the email. And I know Tyler had come and talked about it as well. So I'm just reminding everyone that in about 2 weeks, 3 weeks now, he's planning to have that.
Yeah.
I believe that is the time. We'll forward that email to you as a reminder as well. That's all I've got.
What time do you get?
6 p.m.
It's the same sort of agenda, sort of schedule that we've done for ours. 6, doors open, 6:30, presentation starts.
Is it big enough, everybody?
There'll be games going on here, so if you do come, I'd recommend the overflow parking lot A, or there's also, you can park at the high school, if that gets to that point. We do have a shared use agreement. So the road connects around to their parking lot, and we have a mutual aid agreement where they can use our parking lot and we can use their parking lot based off of that. And so far, we both haven't had the need to use each other's at the same time. It'll be just like the Curtain Creek presentation wise. We'll have a couple panels. We'll just provide a very brief overview of kind of the project and then open up for Q&A. And it's at a point where, similar to how Curtain Creek is we're putting the horses to bed, so we're just letting you know what's going to actually happen versus maybe what it was told before, versus input on design and things like that. So
this is a clarification. The ones I've gone to, you say 6, but the presentation starts at 6:30. Same here.
Yep.
Okay. Because I just want to come
for
the presentation.
6:30.
Yeah. So we're getting we're getting 90% drawings. We have 90% drawings for the harmony. So that's where we are in the process. So 90% construction drawings.
And much like Curtain Creek, there was a change in the scope a couple years ago, and we can't afford that, so we've had to spend the same amount of money, but change the scope. The budget doubled very quickly. Blame it on COVID.
Hey team, before we wrap it up and we make a motion to adjourn the meeting, April 27th also is the date of the annual Pick Up the Burn, wherein all volunteers head out to the Occult Burn State Forest, pick up trash. As usual, they stage some very large containers. So if you've got some stuff at your house and you want to try to get rid of it, this is the opportunity.
So are you going to send out some more? Pick Up the Burn is called?
Yeah. Yep. So it's April 27th. I think they meet for coffee and donuts at 9 for a safety briefing at Jones Creek Trailhead. The containers are usually positioned at Jones Creek and at Four Corners, which is right above Large Camp. And I can tell you, with Large Camp closing permanently and losing that valuable resource, the amount of garbage and vandalism in the Occult is just skyrocketed. I mean, it's incredible, but that is the state of our society.
This stewardship is the DNR,
it's a DNR sponsored event. Now I don't know for sure, but I can get back to everybody. There's also an opportunity to have some burgers and lunch with some of the user groups. One is the Jones Creek Trail Riders Association. They usually have like a barbecue set up, and there's another one is the the Trash No Lands, which is the target shooting group.
So it sounds like Don's going to do a tour of our houses the night before in his Ram and do a pre-cleanup.
Hey, I've got a dishwasher I'm trying to get rid of, so.
Anything else for the good of the order?
Thank you, guys.
Okay, thanks, team. See ya.